The advertisements on the walls were for refreshing and health-giving malted drinks, for 2-shilling day excursions by train to the seaside, for kippered herrings, moustache wax and boot black. They were smoke-blackened relics of the late 20s or the early 30s. Richard stared at them in disbelief. It seemed completely abandoned, a forgotten place.
"It is British Museum Station," admitted Richard.
But there never was a British Museum Station. This is all wrong."
"It was closed down in about 1933 and sealed off," said Dorr.
"How bizarre," said Richard.
It was like walking through history. He could hear trains echoing through tunnels nearby, felt the push of air as they passed.
"Are there many stations like this?"
"About 50, said Hunter. "They aren't all accessible, though. Not even to us."
There was a movement in the shadows at the edge of the platform.
"Hello," said Dorr. "How are you?"
She went down into a crouch. A brown rat stepped out into the light. It sniffed at Dorr's hand.
"Thank you," said Dorr cheerfully. "I'm glad you aren't dead, too."
Richard edged over.
Dorr, could you tell the rat something for me?"
The rat turned its head toward him.
"Miss Whiskers says that if there's anything you've got to say to her, you can tell it to her yourself," said Dorr.
"Miss Whiskers?" Dorr shrugged. "It's a literal translation," she said. "It sounds better in rat." Richard did not doubt it.
Hello, Miss Whiskers. Look, there was one of your rat speaker people, a girl named Anesthesia. She was taking me to the market. We were crossing this bridge in the dark, and she just never made it across."
The rat interrupted him with a sharp squee. Dorr began to talk, hesitantly, like a simultaneous translator.
"She says that the rats do not blame you for the loss. Your guide was taken by the night as tribute."
But,
the rat squeaked again.
"Sometimes they come back," said Dorr.
"She has taken note of your concern and thanks you for it."
The rat nodded to Richard, blinked her bead-black eyes, then leapt to the floor and scurried back into the dark.
"Nice rat," said Dorr.
Her disposition seemed to have improved remarkably now she had the scroll.
"Up there,"
she said, indicating an archway effectively blocked by an iron door. They walked over to it. Richard pushed against the metal. It was bolted from the other side.
"Looks like it's been sealed up," said Richard. "We'll need special tools."
Dorr smiled suddenly. Her face seemed to be illuminated. For a moment, her elfin face became beautiful.
"Richard," she said, "my family, we're openers. It's our talent. Look."
She reached out a grubby hand, touched the door. For a long moment, nothing happened. Then there was a loud crash from the other side of the door and a chunk from their side. Dorr pushed against the door and, with a fierce squeal from the rusted hinges, it opened. Dorr turned up the collar of her leather jacket and thrust her hands deep into the pockets. Hunter shone her flashlight into the blackness beyond the doorway, a flight of stone steps going up into the dark.
"Hunter, can you take the rear?" asked Dorr.
"I'll go on in front. Richard can take the middle."
She walked up a couple of steps. Hunter stayed where she was.
"Lady,"
said Hunter, "you were going to London above?"
"That's right," said Dorr. "We're going to the British Museum."
Hunter bit her lower lip. Then she shook her head.
"I must stay in London below," she said.
There was a tremble in her voice. Richard realized that this was the first time he had ever seen Hunter display any emotion other than effortless competence, or, occasionally, tolerant amusement.
"Hunter," said Dorr, bewildered, "you're my bodyguard. Hunter looked ill at ease. I am your bodyguard in London below, she said. I cannot go with you to London above.
But you have to.
My lady, I cannot.
I thought you understood. The Marquis knows.
Hunter will look after you as long as you stay in London below, thought Richard.
Yes.
No, said Dor, her pointed chin pushed out and up, her odd-coloured eyes narrowed. I don't understand. What is it? She added scornfully. Some kind of curse or something? Hunter hesitated, licked her lips, then nodded. It was as if she were admitting to having some socially embarrassing disease.
Look, Hunter, Richard heard his own voice saying, don't be silly.
For a moment, he thought she was about to hit him, which would have been bad, or even to start crying, which would have been much, much worse. Then she took a deep breath and said, in measured tones,
I will walk by your side when you are in London below, my lady, and I shall guard your body from all harm that might befall you. But do not ask me to follow you to London above. I cannot.
She folded her arms beneath her breasts, planted her legs a little apart, and looked for all the underworld like a statue of a woman not going anywhere, cast in brass and in bronze and in burnt caramel.
Right, said Dor. Come on, Richard.
And she set off up the steps.
Look, said Richard, why don't we stay down here? We can find the Marquis and then all set off together and...
Dor was disappearing into the darkness above him. Hunter was planted at the foot of the stairs.
I shall wait here until she returns, Hunter told him.
You may go or stay, as you will.